Hello and welcome to an emergency broadcast from LPAC TV. In the deadly conditions that we find ourselves in going into this holiday weekend, Mr. LaRouche has decided that it's of urgent necessity that he personally make a statement to the world. We will begin with his remarks and then field a few questions from the live audience gathered here. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Lyndon LaRouche.
What I am going to say is expert, but not officially secret. Many people may not know these things, but they are not secret in that sense. We're now on the verge of what must be called World War III. This will be thermonuclear World War III. Not pre-nuclear war, not nuclear war, but thermonuclear war. The targets, principally, are Russia and China. These are the two principal targets. The war is intended to start, as of now, with an operation coming out of Iran. And it will probably be set up in some form. This war in Iran is, targeting Iran, is supposed to bring Israel into play. That may or may not happen, but that is the option with which this war plan started. The issue is as follows. The present world system, economic system, is in a process of disintegrating. Exactly how that will occur is uncertain, but it's happening. The intention is to eliminate two nations, Russia and China. And this means nuclear weapons, it means thermonuclear weapons. That part is engaged. Once the war starts, probably with an incident orchestrated in Iran or against Iran or something of that sort, then Israel will come into play as starting the heavy fire, but on a limited way. Israel coming into the fire will trigger a setup of thermonuclear World War III, in which the intended targets include Russia and China. Now, at this point, the United States, nations of Europe, Russia, China, and other countries are poised for exactly this war. The background of the war is the fact that the entire world is going bankrupt, especially the transatlantic region, especially Europe, and also the United States and the nations of South America and elsewhere as well. This war has been on the way since the beginning of President Obama's illegal war in Libya. This Libyan war was intended to set up the trigger for launching the larger war, which would be normally involved nations such as Syria and other nations around there. But then it would bring in, with the attack on Iran and the attack on Syria, would bring into play Russia, because Russia would be then a major target, and Russia is prepared for this. Russia is the leading nuclear power, together with China, on the other side. The major capability of conducting this war depends upon the nuclear capabilities and related capabilities of the United States. European nations such as Britain and so forth are nuclear powers, but they don't have the depth of nuclear weaponry that we in the United States have. And therefore, the heavy burden of launching a nuclear war, or a thermonuclear war, actually, depends upon the capabilities of the United States. And we, of course, have the naval forces of the United States in the Eastern Mediterranean and also in the Persian Gulf area now, staged to actually unleash a thermonuclear capability against the targeted enemies for this attack, which are Russia and also China, but other targets as well. So this will be essentially, if it goes, a worldwide thermonuclear war. in which the U.S. thermonuclear capabilities are a crucial factor. That means that if President Obama were to be removed from office on grounds of his known insanity, under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment of the Federal Constitution, if he were eliminated from that, the war would be off. If he remains in office, it is probable that the war, the thermonuclear war, will occur. That's the general situation. The other part of the background is, where's a lot of foolery in this as well, is that the transatlantic region of the world is now bankrupt. The bankruptcy from the United States standpoint was set into motion back in 2007, when the beginning of the bailout process was set into motion. Since that time, the entirety of the transatlantic region, particularly the United States and Europe, have been trapped into a bailout crisis, a hyperinflationary bailout crisis. At this point, the debt, which has been accumulated since 2007 under this program, is such that every part of Europe at this time, under the present rules and the present arrangements, is hopelessly bankrupt. They could never recover as living nations under the present degree of indebtedness they have. The same thing is true of the United States. Europe is a little more acute. That's what's happening. Therefore, if we were to remove an insane president of the United States, Barack Obama, from his position under terms of Section 4 of the 25th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and also other measures, because he has violated the law, he's impeachable on the basis of his violations. If he is removed from office, it is almost certain that this great war now threatening us would be called off. Because if the United States forces are not committed to support the thermonuclear war which the British Empire has orchestrated and set into motion, then they could not conduct the war. So the fate of the civilization now depends upon the hope that President Barack Obama will be removed from office, or suspended from office and then removed, on the basis of his insanity under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment of the Constitution, and impeachable offenses, which he's also guilty of. But the main thing is, get him out of office, or you're going to see the world plunge into hell. And there's nothing in sight that's going to stop that if he remains in office. The author of this thing is the British. But we've had President Bush, President Bush, and we've had now Obama for nearly 12 years in office. And in these 12 years, the wreckage that has been done to the made of the U.S. and Europe has brought us to this point with the aid of this hyperinflationary process set into motion beginning in the autumn of 2007. That's where we stand. Now, what we have to do, there are solutions for this bankruptcy. First of all, we have to put the world through bankruptcy. That is legitimate bankruptcy operation. We can do that by, first of all, in the United States, for example, and other nations can copy this measure in cooperation with the United States. We go with a Glass-Steagall law, a U.S. Glass-Steagall law, and there are nations of Europe who are thinking of adopting the same Glass-Steagall law. Under a Glass-Steagall law, the greater part of the debt of European nations and the United States and others will be wiped out, in effect. Because under Glass-Steagall, the gambling debts, which are the major part of the indebtedness of the United States, will be simply put into a special category where somebody's going to try to figure out how to get these debts paid. And they will never be paid. They will simply be wiped off the books. There's no other solution. Wiping that debt off the books, canceling the bailout debt, will mean that the United States and Europe, if they join, will be in a position to reorganize their finances, to create a credit system, and actually going into a new kind of Hamiltonian kind of credit system, banking system, which will enable the United States and also Europe, if they join, and other nations, in order to organize a financial recovery. In other words, what would happen immediately? Remember, most of this bailout debt, the Wall Street debt, the London debt, the other bailout debt, is absolutely worthless. It can never be repaid. It never could be repaid. And the only solution, of course, for this thing was to have this war. And if the British Empire came out as the victor in such a war, with the support of the United States, then they would cancel their debts, and they would go about their business. But the population of the world would be reduced greatly through hunger, starvation, and so forth, which is about to occur anyway. So therefore, our objective is not merely to stop the war, that's the first thing, but also to stop the Great World Depression, which is a very important thing to do. But then we have to have a recovery program for the world, an economic recovery program. That is possible. For example, we have in the United States one great project ready to go, that in terms of design and so forth. NOAAPA, the North American Water and Power Alliance. This project would be the key for prompting a great and rapid recovery of the U.S. economy, which would mean productive jobs, not make work jobs, productive jobs. It would mean new industries coming back into play on the basis of a Franklin Roosevelt's type of recovery. Europe would obviously join in this, or most of them would join in this operation. So therefore, we have these two choices. Now, if Obama stays in office and stays in power, and I don't think he's about to, you know, give up his insanity. He's too much attached to it. Getting rid of that opens up the gates. Getting rid of Obama opens up the gates. You'd have to make sure he's not killed, because that would also trigger a chaos factor we must not have. But he's got to be put someplace in safety where he no longer is running the United States as a dictator. Once that happens, then we're in a position, since the war will be called off, we'll be in a position to start the recovery. And the recovery will be, the other problem in the recovery will be the following. What has happened recently, especially since the assassination of John F. Kennedy and then his brother Robert, there was a change, a downward movement in the U.S. economy and a loss of much of the character of our nation, the United States, as this process. And what we have to do now is actually get rid of this green policy. Because at present, if you look at your figures and look at the situation, the food supply in the United States and Europe is in a desperate condition. And as long as this kind of policy, the economic policy, the green policy and so forth, remain in power, there will be mass death in the United States and Europe, because we're on the verge of a food shortage beyond belief. We would have to take immediate measures now to begin to remedy the food shortage in the United States, Europe, and so forth. Those measures are necessary. Now, the other aspect of this thing, we talk about Russia, China, India, and so forth, Asia. The Asian part of the world is not in the terrible condition, relatively speaking, which the transatlantic part of the world is in. And that is why Asia is the target. Because when the British Empire and its associates are headed for the destruction of the transatlantic region of the world economy, as well as a lot of people, that would mean leaving Russia, China, and so forth in the position of the dominant nations of the world. And that's what this war is all about. The determination is to eliminate China, Russia, India, and so forth as nations, as powers, in order to carry out the destruction successfully of the nations of the transatlantic region. That's where we are. So therefore, what we have to orient toward is the idea of doing exactly the opposite. We have reached a point that we, together with Russia and China, moving with an orientation toward, of all places, the Arctic, for a worldwide economic recovery. Now, as was pointed out by some of our specialists of our organization recently, the reason for the disappearance of some of the ice in the Arctic region is that the ice stayed up there and didn't move down into the oceans. Therefore, the failure of the ice to eliminate itself in a normal way in the Arctic meant there was an accumulation of this ice in the Arctic region. Recently, the big ice pack, according to our experts who reported this business, the ice pack has now begun to move away from the Arctic. The ice simply slid away and went downstream into the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. Now you have a warming tendency in terms of weather conditions in the Arctic. Suddenly, the Arctic, which has been for a number of years, has been frozen territory, for a long time, is now becoming de-iced in significant degree. Now the development of the world is moving toward opening up what has been the Arctic region for a change in the general direction of the world's economy. Russia is the leader in that. Canada and the United States, particularly Alaska, are potentially the leaders in such a recovery thing. If we then, at the same time, go back to the space program, which means the Mars Goal program, among other things, then we're on the road toward a general new situation for people on this planet in general and for this region. So we've reached that point. So therefore, the point is this. And while I'm not, as I said before, I'm not telling any absolute secrets that I know to be secrets, although I do get a lot of information in terms of my function. But we're at the point where we can escape this problem, we can escape this depression, and we can save civilization with prospects of good things to come. But if we don't remove this president from office, this insane president, who is suited to be removed from office on the basis of his insanity, and Section 4 of the 25th Amendment provides specifically the means to do that. He fits all the standards for expulsion from office right now. And his expulsion from office now might save the world from a thermonuclear war and could probably save much of the world economy. That's where we stand at this time, in short.
Good. Thank you very much. Just to underscore what you ended with, I think to make the point that there is no guarantee of war avoidance despite all of the diplomacy unless we remove Obama from office. I wanted to see if you could elaborate a little bit about the point that you've made about the fact that Obama was placed in office from the beginning by the British, by George Soros, by others, with the intention of starting this war. Coincidentally, I actually was looking back at a short statement that you issued in 2008, August of 2008, right on the eve of the Democratic National Convention. It was called the Tale of Two Generations, and it's worth looking at because it's almost prophetic in its content. It was during the 2008 convention, but it was also during the provoked confrontation between Georgia and Russia in South Ossetia. And you said at that point that because of the rejection of your HBPA of 2007-2008, the world economy was collapsing and the British Empire had no other option than to go for a thermonuclear confrontation. Yeah. And so the context was they placed this guy Obama in office from the beginning to start this war, and I think that makes it very clear why only by removing him from office now can we end this war.
I would add you have to look at the George W. Bush Jr. Because even though he was not, didn't have the brains to be such a menace, he did have people working with him who were specialized in brutality and similar kinds of things. So what you, and you, you, to understand this situation, you have to look at U.S. politics in a special light. That the way in which Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany was largely from London. It was from the British monarchy that brought Hitler into power originally. He was their puppet. It didn't work out as well for them as they intended, but he was their puppet. Now, the man who actually put Hitler into power in Germany was a Bush. Prescott Bush. And Prescott Bush was the one who personally moved the money into Germany to bail out Adolf Hitler when Hitler was about to be excluded from politics on the basis of being bankrupt. So it was the Bush family all the way through, from Prescott Bush through the other Bushes, who have been a key part as British assets, just plain British assets. They're all British assets. Well, of course, the younger Bush is a little bit missing some the few things up here. But they were all, they really are not patriotic Americans. They belong to the British side, the kind of people that Benjamin Franklin wanted to kick out of the country, put them on a boat back to England, and they kept them here. That was a big mistake. But this element, this British element, which is tied to Wall Street, the Boston banks, and so forth, the British element of finance, which is an extension of London finance, has been the key problem here. And so that's the source of the that's the source of the war. We have to, in a sense, recognize that. We have to recognize that since the assassination of Kennedy, look at the Kennedy assassination, for example, because, you know, we think in terms of something happening in terms of our lifetime or our and we don't realize how much history is inside us. We don't realize how many presidents of the United States were actually British assets, for example. And we would have a seesaw battle between getting a patriotic president and a British-owned president to our history. And the Bushes are part of that process. But the way this happened, we had Franklin Roosevelt, who was the man who saved the United States and saved civilization through his presidency. Then he died, and we got a Wall Street character, Truman, in as president, who tried to change everything. Then we got disgusted with Truman, because he was a disgusting person. And we got Eisenhower, who was really an authentic hero, but with a damaged nation on his hands, and did the best he could to save the nation. Fortunately, Eisenhower was followed by Kennedy, by John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was actually saving the nation with his programs. His brother Robert, who was later about to be nominated as the candidate for presidency in the election, so the two Kennedys were killed. The killing of John F. Kennedy, which was a British operation. He was doing things the British hated, and he was eliminated for that reason. And his successor, Johnson, was a scared bunny, and Johnson admitted it. Johnson said, they're going to get me next if I do anything of the sort that Kennedy was doing. So Johnson went along with the war which Kennedy was preventing. And that's why Kennedy was killed, because he was preventing what the British intended was the long Indochina War. And Kennedy was acting under the advice of General Douglas MacArthur, who laid down a policy which Kennedy had supported, and it was the same policy as Eisenhower's policy. So we were drawn into 10 years of a long war from which we have never returned, the Indochina War. And this is, so therefore we have inside us, in the United States, we have a Anglophile, or might call it British lovers, or queen lovers or something, which has always been toward the British side and trying to destroy the United States just the same way that the British organized the Confederacy to destroy the United States. And every other kind of treason. You can say that George W. Bush, if he had the brains to be a traitor, would be a traitor. And this creep we have as president now, I'm not sure he's actually honestly elected. I'm not sure he had the honest votes. I certainly know that the money, the financing of his campaign, which was by the British Empire, he was put into power by the British Empire. He's controlled by the British Empire. He's our enemy from within, but he's clinically insane. So therefore, we should remove him from office under those conditions. He's clinically insane. Once he's out of office, I can assure you from what I know, even though we have a mass of cowardly members of Congress, and some of them are cowardly because they're frightened, and they are legitimately frightened. But we get rid of this guy out of office, put him in some safe place where he's not harmed, because we don't want that complication in his thing. Under that case, we, the United States, will find that we have natural allies in nations including Russia and including China, cooperation with India and other nations. We can turn this thing around immediately, because the American people are ready to be turned around right now. Yes, they're scared. Yes, they're afraid to do things. Yes, this, yes, that. It's all true. But it's those of us who are not scared, that is not scared enough to quit, which is why I'm more of that category, eh? That if we're back in position, and the American people know that they've got us as leaders, not this bunch, then we can make it. We will find natural allies, but not only in Europe in general, but in Russia, the door is open. In China, the door is open. Japan, the door is open. India, the door is open. We will create immediately such a block of cooperation among leading nations of the world that this evil that threatens us now can be removed from us. Now, I don't know all the details of the plans, but I know the plan. I know that's my business. I know the plan. And we get this man out of office, this fake president out of office, this insane man who doesn't belong in office. He's nuts. He's insane, criminally insane. Get him out of office. Let the right people in the United States take charge as they should. Get some guts back into the members of our Congress. And we're on the road to recovery. Because the shock of what's happened to us, we come so close to virtually extermination of civilization. We're scared enough. I think we're willing to change.
Yeah, I'd like you to follow up on this concept of natural alliances. I think it's useful to remember that your first presidential campaign was done as an effort to stop thermonuclear war with the Soviet Union under the Trilateral Commission around Jimmy Carter at that time in 1976. In the years following that, you proposed what became known and adopted by President Reagan as the Strategic Defense Initiative for war avoidance, but uniquely war avoidance driven by a strategic understanding of the principles of physical economy. The idea that by investing jointly and mutually in front-end technologies as a science driver policy, that you would actually raise the technological and cultural level of both the United States and the Soviet Union, that you would shift the entire strategic posture of the world. You would create, in effect, a new world. Today, we find ourselves in a somewhat parallel situation, only it's now coming from the Russian side, the proposal for what's being called the Strategic Defense of Earth, an elaboration of your original SDI, which calls for expanding the protective umbrella to include not just missile defense, but also defense against extraterrestrial threats. Again, it contains within it the seeds of the same sort of physical economic revolution that you had explicitly designed within the SDI. So I'd like you maybe to just elaborate on what should be the natural alliance, particularly based on these kinds of physical economic considerations, of the United States with these large Asian and Eurasian nations, and Russia in particular.
First thing you have to take into account that What was true in the 1970s already was that with the existence of nuclear arsenals of the type we had then and the delivery capabilities that existed at that time, that the idea of a general new world war at that time in the 70s was clinically insane. Now, that threat continued. There was a massive British effort to shut that down, to shut down the what we had planned as the Strategic Defense Alliance. And it was, but nonetheless, the problems continued. The danger of nuclear weapons, of thermonuclear weapons, increased. And if they exist and war exists among major nations, those weapons are going to be used. And similar kinds of weapons, biological weapons and so forth, the whole kit and caboodle. So therefore, we've come to a period of life in which it is no longer possible to allow general warfare to occur on this planet. Now with thermonuclear capabilities and related capabilities which exist, it is no longer feasible to tolerate general warfare on this planet, which means that the long legacy, the oligarchical legacy of great warfare, must come to an end. At the same time, we're entering a new kind of problem. It's an old problem, but it's a new one for us. We've now reached the point that we must, for example, we must reach Mars. A man landing and development on Mars is now a signal of the end of warfare on this planet. Not because it's going to cause the end of warfare, but because it means a change in the way we think in the necessary type. We're now, as we know now, that the solar system, which is a part of the galaxy, is entering an arm of the galaxy which is going to become extremely dangerous for human life. That is the degree of radiation, density of radiation, and types of radiation we have to expect in the area we're getting into now is a threat to us. What we have to do is we have to actually begin to get some colonization, particularly on Mars. Mars is the most important case, in which we start to build up defenses against this problem. Not a warfare problem, but a natural problem. And that's the point we've come to. So this becomes now our new destiny. We have to think differently. We don't have to want to think anymore about war. Yes, we want nation states, because national cultures are important. Human culture and its development of the language culture and so forth, these things are things we have to defend and preserve. And we have to have national sovereignty. Otherwise, we really don't have democracy without sovereignty. So therefore, our direction has to change to a science driver program, away from this green nonsense, which is going to kill us. That means we're going to have to go to Mars. We're going to have to do the things that enable us to put people alive, human people, staying alive on Mars. And that's going to be part of our job in building up the defenses within the solar system and beyond, which are necessary to deal with this galactic threat, which we will be able to deal with scientific progress. We have to end zero growth, because the only way we can continue to defend human life's existence on this planet now, with the increasing density of radiation which the solar system is going to experience, including Earth, is going to experience in the galaxy, the arm of the galaxy we're entering now, is to develop the highest possible technology, which will enable us to maintain and develop the defenses of human life within the solar system itself, against this development is coming from a galactic source. And that's so therefore our orientation has to be a new orientation for mankind, for the human species, which it must include things like the colonization of Mars. That's going to be a tricky thing, but with higher technology, we can do it. And so therefore we have to go to higher objectives, new objectives, to replace the old business of warfare.
Well, I think it's very provocative that you said that. Colonization of Mars program will indicate the end of wars on Earth because of the change in the way that man thinks about man. And you've just issued a new report called Reflections on Nicholas of Cusa.
Yeah.
And in that report, in the context of the collapse of the Roman imperial system with the Dark Age of the 14th century, you have one mind, the mind of Nicholas of Cusa, addressing this very question, the way that man thinks of man. And so many of the pathologies that we have associated with the existentialism of today comes from a location of identity within the five senses, both in terms of what's happening and also in terms of our situation in time, so-called, in terms of our experience of the today. And I was wondering if you can just say a little bit more about this, the role of a Nicholas of Cusa in the context of the Dark Age that we're experiencing today.
Well, you know, the problem is we are so accustomed to certain conventional ideas about man and so, similar kinds of things, the scientific kinds of things, that we fail to realize that what we call our sense perceptions are really not what they're cracked up to be. And therefore, we have to come to a new understanding about how the human mind works. I'm working on this, particularly this. That's my lifelong project right now. And this does lend itself to exactly solving those kinds of problems. It's going to be a fundamental change in the way people think about themselves and about society, but it's the natural way they should come to think about this thing. And therefore, we've come to a time of crisis in which the alternative to the crisis itself pushes us in the direction of thinking about how does man's mind work? And how is man capable of understanding the universe in such a way that we're capable of using our minds to develop the technologies and the method of using those technologies, which we need now. So the time has come for mankind to grow up, get out of childhood, and come into the role of man as a man in the solar system, man dealing with the galaxy which we inhabit, and looking beyond that to other galaxies. Because we know now that it's possible for mankind to become a significant force in this galaxy and beyond. And the colonization of Mars, which is a feasible project for undertaking, it will come with step by step by step, accelerating. But that project will mean a new future for mankind. And instead of playing with these old toys of war and stupidity, spend a little more effort on the future of mankind. And Cusa would love that.
Well, then I'd like to ask a question pertaining to the maybe the field strategy for this war against the British Empire. We have a slate of six candidates, congressional candidates for federal office. And you had mentioned in a recent national webcast address that we are way past the time where party politics has any meaning and any effectiveness. You had laid out a strategy for a bipartisan alternative in the context of getting rid of this current president through constitutional means. Now, you would put that forward not as some kind of electoral strategy, but really as a necessary step to allow people to actually deal with universal principles, to be able to discuss policy at the level of principle rather than party. So I was hoping maybe you could speak to that perspective in the context of our fight to free the country from this blight called Obama.
Well, actually, what's happened, partisan politics has always been a dubious prospect in our history. The idea that there are questions of ideas, which differing ideas, and that sort of thing, is not the problem. What's the problem is when you make a ritual out of a sort of a kind of a cult-like thing of political parties, which have no principle. They have slogans. They have habits. But there is no principle. The question is, I will line up with this guy in order to screw this guy. And that's what party politics has come to. Now, I'm not against party politics. I'm against unprincipled party politics. I think where there's a clear issue of principle in terms of national policy within the framework of our constitutional intention, but within that framework, as opposed to the Confederacy's idea, fine. You have people who ally and in a form of partisanship on issues which they think they must present. But the unprincipled thing of saying, well, what is going to be our principle this year for this election campaign? This is nonsense. And most, of Democrats and Republicans is really not a moral, it's not a moral set of categories. It's more opportunist than moral. So therefore, the problem we dealt with in terms of this election campaign season was to say that running as candidates on the name of a party ticket is not the way politics should be run. Divisions in politics should go on the basis of principles, not these kinds of party tickets, and not these inventions. So therefore, if someone is running for a national office, say as a senator or a congressman, he should be concerned with a policy question, which defines the partisanship. Not have the partisanship come first and the politics second and the intention second. First must come the intention. And if people working on the intention, then they're going to concentrate on trying to realize the intention. Of course, there are things like sectional problems. And sectional partisanship is not a bad thing necessarily if it's done in the proper form. But the way we were treating party as such as the principle, rather than principle as the basis for party, is what the mistake is. And we have to, at this point, we have a lot of good Republicans, a lot of good Democrats out there in terms of partisanship. They are perfectly good people. But what we get now is, now partisanship then becomes the game. And it becomes in state politics, on national level, and state and national politics, and so forth. And this is absolutely ridiculous. There is no principle. Therefore, the citizen does not know what a principle is in terms of party vote. They vote party, not principle. And what should happen is principle should control party. If there's a difference in principle, if that is national principle, there's a difference in party. And the party principle is a way of fighting out these differences. But an unprincipled side of politics, an unprincipled kind of partisanship, is proving itself to be extremely destructive. The most recent election was an absolute abomination. There was absolutely no principle worth calling a principle in the whole shebang. You have people as individual politicians who had principle and a respectable principle. My view is simply that those today, in this coming year's election, general election, principle, not party, must dominate. And therefore, those who are members of parties should vote the principle and vote the principle of the ticket, not the partisanship as such.
And I think the cross-party principle is absolutely clear right now. I mean, you have Hitler in the White House. You have this bill that was just passed in the name of the Defense Authorization Act, which is a Hitler-enabling act for Barack Obama. Anybody, an American citizen now, can be grabbed off the street and imprisoned without trial, disappeared. So I think the principle is quite clear around which both parties have to come together. And I think in terms of a conclusion for what we are gathered here today for, what you stated in the beginning, that there is no option to avoid thermonuclear war, perhaps even before Christmas or in the week between Christmas and the New Year, unless we remove Barack Obama from office. That's the point that people have to come away with. And I think if people are willing to join us in our mobilization this weekend, we have material on the website. We have a leaflet that can be printed out, distributed. We have currently a mobilization happening on 5 continents on this planet, which we're covering on this website. So you can stay tuned to LaRouchePAC.com. We're going to be on watch, and we'll be in full mobilization. So I'd like to thank you all for watching, and stay tuned to LaRouchePAC.com.